What's up, everyone, and welcome to the most positive pop culture podcast in the multiverse, Metalcore Nerds, where each week I have a guest from the podcasting and music community, and we talk about the latest and greatest in entertainment. I'm your host, Sean Mott, and today we're talking about Superman Legacy, Guillermo del Toro's next movie, and the last three episodes of The Mandalorian. My co-host this week is Grant of Galactic Empire. Welcome to the show, man.
How's it going?
Good, man. How about you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no problem at all. Very stoked to have you on this, and fitting talking about Star Wars.
Yeah.
For anyone who doesn't know Galactic Empire and you're living under a rock, they do metal renditions of Star Wars songs for the most part. It's super sick. The Mandalorian drop song was perfect timing.
Awesome.
Obviously. I'm guessing you guys had to have planned that, right?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, we probably should have done it sooner since we're, you know, three seasons in now. But something weird happened back in like 2020 where like a lot of bands stopped doing things for a while. I don't know. Maybe you heard about it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, definitely heard about it for sure.
So we're just kind of now getting back into things.
Very stoked for the new album coming out May 5th. Again, very fitting with the Star Wars theme. I love how on brand it is.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, the streaming is May 3rd and the physical is May 5th.
Okay.
For some reason, we couldn't target May 4th completely, so it just kind of surrounds it instead.
Oh, well, that works. Yeah. If you are new to Metalcore Nerds, thank you so much for checking out the show. And if you're coming back, it's always amazing to have you here. This is how the show breaks down. Each week, we talk about the latest and greatest nerd news. Then we go into our now watching section where we recommend you, the audience, what you should be watching in theaters and or streaming. And then we get into our main topic. But first things first, the Metalcore Nerds Song of the Week. Song of the Week this week is from the band What Lies Below. This is their latest single, Bound. Again, that was What Lies Below with their latest single, Bound. A few more new music topics. Silverstein just dropped a new single called Poison Pill. The band remains to be super solid after all of these years. If you've been a fan of their latest releases, you'll definitely be into this. August Burns Red just dropped their latest album, their 10th album in 20 years. Impressive as hell. Death Below on Sharptone Records.
This might be a little shameless self-promotion plug time. August Burns Red, Death Below. Carson and I produced that record.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Great job.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm very excited about that record. Those guys are from our town, so we've known them for a long time. We've worked with them for a very long time. But they're, most importantly, they're great friends. I don't even really think them as like a client or anything. But yeah, we've been working with them for years, and they're just the best group of dudes.
Yeah, that's awesome. I've heard nothing but good things. I played a fest with them like many, many years ago.
What band were you in?
This band called Ghost Ship.
Okay,
From Syracuse, New York.
Yeah.
And we played this fest called I Matter Fest. It's near Pennsylvania. It was in Horseheads. So it's like the bottom part of New York near Pennsylvania. And they all seem really cool. They all have seemed down to earth. And being a band that long, it seems like you have to, there's no way you can be like shitty dudes and be a band that long. It's impossible.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way.
Yeah. They definitely, they deserve everything that they have, you know, coming to them. They're great. But I don't know if you have had a chance to hear the rest of the record yet.
I've heard the whole thing. Yep.
You've heard it? Okay.
Yep. The whole record is really good. And admittedly, I haven't been like the biggest August Burns Red fan. It's always been like, this band is insanely talented. But after a few songs, I'm kind of like, I get it. But this album, I think they really did a good job of kind of diversifying their sound and really adding more to what makes August Burns Red's good, but like turning it up a little bit, which I really respect. And all of the guest spots they have on it, what I really loved about it is that they lean into the bands that the guest person is on, but still sounds like August Burns Red. And I don't know, sometimes I've heard bands do that, but not in the way that they did.
Yeah.
Like when JT from Era's on it, kind of sounds like an Era song, but August Burns Red wrote it. Like when Spencer from Under Oath on it, kind of sounds like a part of an Under Oath song, but it's August Burns Red.
I think they did a great job of picking moments for each person, for sure.
Yeah, which that part was, because like I said, I don't really know a lot of bands that do it to the level that they did. And I found that insanely impressive. But it's a very, very good record.
Yeah, very excited for it to get out there.
Yeah, people are going to love it. Like I feel like people like me who haven't been the biggest August Burns Red fan and August Burns Red fans are just going to be over the moon about it.
Yeah, hope so.
You can actually read my full review right now on idobe.com. And Dead Lakes, they have a new album, Daydreamer, coming out this upcoming Friday. A real roll your windows down, summer vibes, really catchy record. You can also read my full review of that right now on idobe.com. Well, let's get into some nerd news. James Gunn, was announced that he was going to be writing Superman Legacy, but he has now confirmed that he will be directing it as well. It is set to come out on July 11th, 2025. And the film comes out on his father's birthday, which he revealed in this really nice, long social media post. And he said that he found the emotion in writing the character while connecting with like the death of his dad, which is pretty cool. And I know it's kind of hard to write Superman. And I know there's been problems with that because, you know, it's basically a Jesus-like character. And it can be hard to connect with that type of character. But I think if anyone can do it, it's probably James Gunn. He's made people feel emotional about a talking raccoon. So I know we were talking about this a little before, but you're more of a Marvel guy. But James Gunn was a Marvel guy. Well, still is until May. So what do you think about this news of him taking over DC and him helming the first big DC movie in his era?
I mean, I got to say, I'm a big fan of the Marvel movies, and I think James Gunn has always done great, especially with Guardians of the Galaxy. So I'm very excited to see what he does with the DC universe. I always felt like there were a couple DC movies that I really enjoyed. I enjoyed Man of Steel. I liked the first Wonder Woman. There were a lot of other DC movies that I thought, and I don't know, this is just my opinion. Everyone gets very, you know, into this. But I felt like they fell a little flat for me personally. So I'm very excited to see you know, what James Gunn can do with the DC movies specifically. So it'd be an interesting refresher. Have you heard anything about casting? Because I know obviously that Henry Cavill isn't doing it.
Nothing yet, other than I know it's going to be probably a younger actor because it's supposed to be a younger Superman. And I know a lot of people are upset with the Henry Cavill thing. I was a little upset about it because I Henry Cavill made me like into Superman with Man of Steel. I never really cared about Superman at all. I was always a Batman guy. But after Man of Steel, I was like, oh, maybe I do like Superman. And it kind of made me like it, which is funny because Man of Steel is not really like a actual Superman story. It's like super dark and, you know, obviously he kills Zod in it, which is kind of not really a Superman thing.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see his take on like a hopeful Superman. And I think they got there eventually with Zack Snyder's Justice League. He came full circle to become that Superman near the end of there.
Yeah.
But to come out swinging with a new, younger version, a refreshed version, probably is the way to go. I can understand why he wanted to recast, especially with Superman being such a pivotal role. And it seems like they are recasting some of like the bigger DC characters, like we're getting a new Batman and everything like that. So it makes sense. I'm very curious to see who they're going to cast. I have no idea. I've seen some cool fan casts out there, but other than that, nothing.
Yeah, it's kind of tricky for me because I'm definitely a huge Henry Cavill fan, and I'm bummed to see him, you know, not in The Witcher anymore either. So
I know Marvel needs to snatch him up.
Yeah, I guess they could.
I know he's busy in Amazon with his Warhammer series he's working on and stuff like that. So we'll see.
Yeah, that's supposed to be pretty big. Apparently, I've been hearing some things. So
I have no idea when that's going to come out, but I love Henry Cavill, so I'm not familiar with that property, but anything he does, I'll watch it.
Yeah, I'll sign me up.
Yeah. Last piece of news is Guillermo del Toro is doing a Frankenstein movie at Netflix. He has a big deal at Netflix now. And in talks to star in the movie are Andrew Garfield, Mia Goth, and Oscar Isaac. Now, you had me at Guillermo del Toro doing a horror movie, especially doing his own version of Frankenstein. But having those in the cast, that is insane casting for whatever they're playing. All great actors in their own right.
Yeah.
Are you a fan of Guillermo at all?
Yeah, actually, we just watched Pinocchio recently.
Nice.
Thought he did a really good job with that. Yeah, I love his darker spin on everything. It's very interesting. So, yeah, it seems like I didn't see Cabinet of Curiosities. Did you watch that one?
I started watching like the first episode, and it was cool, but it's not really like he like curated it. It's not really his stuff. It's more of like his vision and like other, he brought in people to do all the episodes. It's like an anthology thing. But from what I saw, it was cool. I don't think I was in the right state of mind to watch like that kind of vibe of stuff at the moment. So I was like, I'll table this and I'll come back to it later.
Yeah. I mean, obviously like Pan's Labyrinth, you know, like that's like a classic. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm very excited to, I'll definitely check out Frankenstein for sure.
Yeah. How do you feel about that acting? If that ends up being true, of those three being cast in the movie.
I mean, that's an all-star cast. Yeah, that would knock it out of the park. Oscar Isaac is sick, too. I didn't know he was going to do it.
Yeah, that's the word on the street. Seeing Oscar Isaac and Andrew Garfield together is awesome. And then just Mia Goth is just, she's the new, like, horror queen. Her and, like, Jenna Ortega are, like, the ones.
Yeah.
That are taking over.
For sure.
Seemingly, which is cool. But awesome. We can move into our now watching section. Grant, what have you been watching lately?
So some of the things I've been watching lately, let's see. Well, obviously Mandalorian, which we can get into, but also been checking out Shadow and Bone. Just finished that recently.
How is that?
I like it. It's a little cheesy, but you know, I think any fantasy kind of can tend to be that way sometimes. Yeah. But I thought it was a good watch. Ted Lasso, been catching up on that one as well.
Yes. Are you up to date?
Yeah. We just watched the next episode, the second episode last night. So great show. I've been trying to keep up on South Park.
Oh, wow. I've heard it's been really good.
Yeah. They're just so good at staying up with current events. I'm trying to think of other things that I've been watching. I don't know. What have you been checking out?
Also, Ted Lasso. It's one of my favorite shows probably ever. It's just, it's so crazy what this show does, how it feels like such like a, I always call it like, it's like a warm blanket. That's what it always feels like watching it. But they still do a really good job at like diving into like human emotions and like real life stuff while balancing that. I'm so happy it's back. I said like the universe knew something was happening because like The Last of Us happened.
Oh, right. I forgot to mention that one.
Yeah. Being the most, you know, depressing, utterly debilitating show, and then having Ted Lasso come in right after it ending. It's like the universe telling us that we needed it this time, which I think is really cool. I've talked about this on the show a couple times, but I've watched Shrinking. It's also on Apple TV Plus.
Oh, we've been watching that too. Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Amazing show. It's some of the same behind the scenes team as Ted Lasso, so it makes sense. It has
Harrison Ford is hilarious in it.
So good. Like, I did not know I needed Harrison Ford in a role like that, but
yeah.
Wow, it's so great. Other than that, I just got back from LA. I went to see Stick to Your Guns. They played pretty much songs from every album for four nights in a row at Chain Reaction.
Nice. And
on the plane ride there, I watched After Sun. It's an A24 movie. Paul Mescal, the star, got nominated for Best Actor for it. I don't know if it got overhyped for me or just... I'm very hit or miss with those kinds of movies. It's very like a slice of life kind of movie. It's basically... Paul Mescal plays a father, and he's taking his daughter on a vacation. And it's really kind of the journey of that and seeing as she's, I believe, 11 in the movie, and her kind of like growing up, and then him also struggling with life, and her growing up and realizing that he was struggling with life, but still trying to give her this like awesome vacation experience. So it's a nice movie. I just didn't love it like a lot of people seem to love it.
I haven't seen it, so.
It's not streaming anywhere, so you have to like rent it. It's not like, and okay. It was a very limited release in theaters, and it's a very small, independent Oscar-type movie. So yeah. Not a lot of people have seen it, admittedly. But I usually like to watch pretty much anything involved with the Oscars. It's usually like a goal of mine, and I usually do watch most of them, so... it was on the plane, so I was like, oh, well, I'll watch it. Other than After Sun, the only thing I watched, my wife and I went to the theaters and saw Creed 3. Man, this trilogy has got to be one of the best modern trilogies there is. Honestly, I don't know if you've seen the Creed movies.
I haven't. That's one thing I need to catch up on. They're part of the Rocky series, right?
Like, yes. Basically a continuation. Rocky's in Creed 1 and Creed 2. He's not in the third one. But it makes sense because it's a very much like a personal story to Creed. So I think adding him in there kind of would have taken away from it a little bit. But Jonathan Majors plays the antagonist, and that dude has had an insane year already playing two massive antagonists in movies. And this dude is just terrifying.
Yeah.
Like Sam was watching and she's like, this is like a horror movie. This dude is so scary. And I didn't think it was horror movie level, but I can see her sentiments because he is so methodical mentally, and I really love that. And then once you get him in the ring, the dude is just even more terrifying somehow. If you haven't caught Creed 3, any of the Creed movies, I can't recommend them highly enough. Seriously, easily one of the best like modern trilogies there is out there. And like a really just solid, even like I'm not big into sports overall anyway. Like, I've never cared about boxing in my life. I love these movies.
Yeah, you and I are the same way. I have no interest in, like, soccer or football, you know, as you would call it.
Ted Lasso.
Like Ted Lasso, yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Same thing.
Same thing, yeah. I'm like, I have no care at all, but I'm watching it. I want Richmond to win.
Yeah.
That's a testament to good storytelling and good characters, is that you can make people care about these things they normally don't care about. That's like the biggest testament to anything like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But all right, let's get to what we came here to talk about, The Mandalorian. So I haven't talked about The Mandalorian this season since the debut. So we had three episodes come since then, episodes 2 through 4. There's a lot that happened in these episodes. That's for sure. I know this season has been, I don't know. It seems like people are a little down on it. Not totally, but I've seen... This is the first time I've seen kind of a negative reaction to The Mandalorian in any way. First two seasons were very highly loved. I want to get your general thoughts on what you've thought of this season so far.
It's incredible. I mean, I just think Jon Favreau has such a handle on what old fans and what new fans of Star Wars want. He just gets it. And out of all of the new Star Wars that's come out since, you know, Disney has taken over the franchise, I just think he just nails it every time. I think this new season's great. I mean, are we allowed to talk about spoilers, obviously?
Oh, yeah, full spoilers. Yeah.
I mean, you know, the development that he's doing with Grogu, I really like, you know, kind of coming into his own. You know, we were like, is he going to be a Jedi or is he going to be a Mandalorian? You know, at the end of the day, he's just this cute little, like, you know, alien, like just scurrying around. And you always just stop and laugh at him because he's like the heart of the show. Yeah. But, you know, it's interesting to see him kind of come into possibly a more more involved role in terms of combat and things like that.
Yeah.
So we'll be interested to see how that goes. And, you know, he's getting his first pieces of armor now. And
I was very interested to see like the path of Grogu overall. And I do love that they've made it so they've sprinkled this in throughout the whole series. And even in Book of Boba Fett, that he's not completely helpless. He's even like saved Din's life multiple times, but now he's like fully capable. Like him even going back to Bo-Katan to help save Din and everything like that, and him holding his own against that weird creature that was on Mandalore, you're like, oh, wow, like this dude, he's got it.
Yeah, I feel like he's modest. Like, you know, it takes Din saying like, no, dude, it's cool. You can yeah. do it. Like, he didn't want to show off. He's polite.
There is like a big thing, too, where he had to like hide who he was for like decades, you know, yeah. hiding out from the Empire, which I'm wondering if we're going to get more story with that to fill in those gaps more. Obviously, we got more insight into that with the last episode of you know, who saved him and everything like that.
Which, but by the way, that was insane. I think that was really cool of Jon Favreau to give Ahmed Best a new revival because of all the fan backlash that he had received. It kind of ruined him for a while.
Yeah. And did you know that he hosts this Jedi Academy game show, and his character as the host of the show is the character that's now canon?
Okay. Like the same character that rescued Grogu?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Kelleran Beck is his name as the Jedi host, and now is his canon name in Star Wars, which I thought was really cool. And yeah, what a badass way. Because I was talking to someone, they were like, I was kind of let down by him being the one who saved him. I was like, why? I was like, who'd you expect it to be? I was like, everyone like cool or well known was dead or busy.
Yeah.
So I don't really know who it could have been that would have been cooler. I just thought it, like, same as you. I thought it was such a cool, almost like I tweeted saying the Mandalorian just gave us one of the coolest redemption stories in pop culture probably ever.
Yeah. I mean, why wouldn't you appreciate that? I mean, it's what better way to like give him a tip of the hat than to allow him to save one of the most beloved characters of the franchise? You know, like
right.
he is like the savior of Grogu.
Which is so amazing. And I do hope we get more of that story kind of filled in to how he almost gets to where he was, where Din found him. Because it seems like they kept him hidden for decades. And finally they caught some wind of him, and that's why he was a bounty. You know, it's just like, I hope we do get that filled in later on.
Yeah, like how did he end up on this planet? How long has he been there? What happened between all those years? Like,
we just need to know more. And I think we probably will. That's like the cool thing about The Mandalorian as well, is that the gaps they're filling in different things. Like, obviously, especially with episode 3, we're definitely leaning into the whole, we're finding out how they figured out how to clone Palpatine. That's definitely what they're leaning into.
And
they're leaning into that very hard with The Bad Batch as well. I don't know if you're watching The Bad Batch.
Yeah, I've been catching up on that. I'm not quite as caught up on Bad Batch, but I'm in the current season.
Cool. Yeah, and they're definitely adding in more seeds, which they did in season 1 too. But it's cool seeing them add more information in two separate time periods of Star Wars too, of how that ends up happening, which is the funniest thing, because it makes somehow Palpatine returned just dumber and dumber by more lore that they're adding into it. Like, obviously he didn't know either way, but still it's just like that line is silly, and it's just making the line sillier as the time goes on.
I think they're just trying to retcon the whole like somehow Palpatine returned, and like, they're like, okay, we're gonna try to explain it now.
Yeah, Filoni's doing the Filoni thing where he makes things better, like like he did with the prequels, with the Clone Wars. He just adds stuff in to enhance things, and that's exactly what he's doing now.
I also like how they're answering questions that people have, you know, like, okay, so if they can't take their helmets off, how do they eat? Like, You know, right. They're like, okay, here, look, we're gonna explain it to you guys. So they did a good job of that. And there was another thing like that that they answered in this last episode. I can't remember what it was, but yeah, they seem to constantly try to help give you some explanation to some things. Yeah.
Which is cool. And then kind of add to what you started this with is that The Mandalorian is the perfect blend of Star Wars, whether it's like OG trilogy, sequel trilogy, prequel trilogy. It's like a blend of everything all into one. And it's such like it amazes me the stuff they bring to this world because it feels so genuinely Star Wars, but a new thing. Because it's like the main character is a Mandalorian, and not a lot of people were familiar with Mandalorians other than Boba Fett, really, unless you watch the animated stuff, which got really heavy in Mandalorian lore. And that's why I've been such a fan of this season, because it's obviously very heavy in Mandalorian. And I love getting even more info about their culture and their people. Bo-Katan has been such a surprise to me this season. Not that I thought Katee Sackhoff would be like bad or anything, because she's obviously an incredible talent. It's just I thought she was definitely just going to be the antagonist of the season.
Same.
It seemed like not at all.
Well, they could still flip it on a dime.
Yes,
because I feel like they have given a lot of foreshadowing. So I mean, she could infiltrate try to steal the Darksaber and end up trying to rule Mandalore now that she knows that everything's okay. Maybe she'll be the one that rides the Mythosaur. I don't know.
Yeah, that's why I'm like the whole kind of flipping on its head of I thought she was going to be like the antagonist from the jump, at least.
Yeah.
And her not being and her kind of helping Din out and then now joining the covert. I was like, I did not see this coming whatsoever. So I'm very interested. So even if she does make that turn, it'll be kind of, man, that kind of sucks. I liked her. being a part of this group. It'll be kind of a bummer.
I mean, the obvious thing to do would be to all of a sudden drop up Moff Gideon's back, you know, and I mean, because we don't really know who's pulling the strings right now, like the attack on her home and everything. But like, why wouldn't it be him? You know, because he got away, didn't he, at the end of season two?
Heavily alluded to that, at least in episode three, where they're like saying the rumors like, oh, I think he got away or whatever.
Yeah,
because in Book of Boba Fett, he mentions to the armorer that, oh, yeah, he's going to be tried for his crimes or whatever. And, you know, everyone treats the New Republic like a joke, which episode three leaned into even heavier, that it's very flawed. And, you know, them getting rid of 90% of the military, even having droids be kind of the check-in point for people of how they're doing with their reintegration is so like humanless, you know, because it's like, well, they can't read emotion. You know,
I've been hearing a lot of people say, too, like, you know, perhaps this is going to describe how the New Republic ends up sort of falling and then becoming, you know, the First Order.
Yeah.
So that would be interesting to see if, you know, it just takes a similar path that, you know, the Republic did.
Yeah, it kind of seems like it is. And did you enjoy the episode three? I know you said you've loved the season so far, so I'm guessing you
I know it received a lot of criticism, either in a positive way or negative way, for feeling like an episode of Andor. I mean, it certainly did, in a sense that, you know, we're on Coruscant and we're, you know, getting a lot more kind of like into the weeds on the political side of things. But, you know, obviously they were building some backstory, like they were world building, and they're going to, I'm sure, reveal more. But I was fine with it. I had no real issues with it. I think they did a good job in interworking that story into Mandalorian. Now, maybe the pacing is a little weird, because normally when you have like two different side like plots, you'll cut between them. But I think it was just the beginning of the episode was Mandalorian, and then for like 40 minutes it was this other show completely. Yeah. And then at the end they bookended it with Mandalorian again. So, you know, maybe that's what people are upset about. But I mean, I was fine with it. I'm not like really, I don't get too bent out of shape about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, me either. And I think it's hard to judge whether, because obviously Dr. Pershing was introduced in season one of The Mandalorian. And then the general was in season two directly to Moff Gideon, was his right hand. So it's like these are characters that have been in The Mandalorian. And yes, it was a main focus on them. But I think, like you said, it's going to be a major player in the latter of this season, with either Moff Gideon comes back, or it's Moff Gideon And I'm wondering if we get any indication of Thrawn again leading up to the Ahsoka series.
Yeah, they would have to do that, I would almost think.
I feel like they'd be pretty likely to introduce him fully, whether it's him in person or it's another reference to him or something like that. I'm really curious to see what he's been doing ever since the events of Rebels. Yeah. And I mean, they even teased that in episode one with the Purrgil, seeing that, which was, I was like, man, they're really laying in. Like, if you haven't seen Rebels, you were like, I don't know what these things are that Grogu saw in hyperspace, but I'm sure if you went on the internet, you saw someone talking about it and were like, oh, okay, they're connected to Rebels.
Yeah, I did see about that. That's one show I haven't totally caught up on. I definitely need to check out Rebels.
It's very good. There's a lot of, you see kind of Bo-Katan, her getting the Darksaber and everything like that. And Thrawn in it is incredible. It's just like, it's a solid, like if you like Clone Wars, you'll like Rebels. There's like, you know, Ahsoka has a big part to play in it for the most part. Tons of Inquisitors, which is cool.
Who's doing Ahsoka? Is it Deborah Chow?
Filoni.
Oh, Filoni's doing it. Okay, yeah.
Which makes sense. His creation. Of course, he's going to take care of it.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see how these kind of interweave with each other and how much overlap there is with each other kind of moving forward with The Mandalorian and Ahsoka. I'm very interested to see, because if Thrawn does come in Mandalorian, I would imagine there will be some crossover with Ahsoka for sure. One big thing we've been kind of talking about, who will lead the Mandalorian people, but I think this is all leading to possibly Grogu being almost like the chosen one to lead the Mandalorian people. He'll finally be like Tar Vizsla, the original, like the creator of the Darksaber, being a Jedi Mandalorian, kind of leading their people. And obviously that'd kind of be down the line, I would imagine. But I have this, I've talked about this with a bunch of people on the show, is that I have this incredible want of a future thing like post-sequel trilogy of Ezra, Rey, Grogu, like leading this new Jedi Order, one that's not so pent, like, because all of these people will be people who have leaned into their attachments rather than foregoing attachments and kind of leading this new kind of way of being a Jedi where it's not so arrogant and flawed and just almost like zealot-like. And I'm interested to see if they ever do anything like that.
I'm wondering how they could pull that off, because obviously Grogu isn't around for any of the sequel trilogy. So like, there would be some explaining to do there, I feel, almost.
Yeah. It's hard. It's hard, especially, and I've had that conversation too. Obviously, it's a big galaxy for one, but they're having these people so almost heavily involved with the Empire or the risings of the First Order that it'll be hard to be like, where were they that whole time?
Right. Yeah. Like, I mean, I guess they, you know, figured out how to answer where was Luke during this whole time. So there are ways to do it.
Yeah. And Filoni did a great explanation of where was Ahsoka in the prequels. They explained that perfectly in Clone Wars, and where the Rebel crew was during the original trilogy, because they all fought in it. And they all it took was one epilogue and they explained where they were the whole time. Because you only see the battle from one point of view. You don't see the full, and that's like a way you can totally explain it away. But I've always been curious of where was Grogu during all of this? Or even if Din was alive, where was he? You know, especially if they're so involved with the Empire now, unless they like go to, you know, maybe they rebuild Mandalore and just like, we're chilling here.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, I think, pretty challenging to take a story that has been working for almost 50 years now and find a way to keep it all canonical, which was never the plan to begin with.
No.
So I think they're doing a good job at least, you know, trying to tie it all together, like you said.
Yeah, and if I have faith in anyone, it's Filoni and Favreau. Those dudes are like, you know, Filoni is like the second coming of George Lucas easily. I feel like he knows more Star Wars than George Lucas at this point, which is crazy to say, but I think it might be true.
I would be happy if they were just running the ship at this point, yeah.
Me too, especially with all the movie stuff. You know, something gets announced, gets canceled. Someone gets, oh, hey, they're doing this. Oh, they're not doing it. That's why I think I wanted to hear your opinion on this. They should just do all these things are obviously like leading to something eventually. They should just do a big crossover Mandalorian movie.
Oh, that would be sick.
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Like, what more to get people? Because obviously the sequel trilogy was very like divisive and whatever, you know, Star Wars fandom can be Star Wars fandom. Mandalorian's pretty much universally loved for the most part. People really love it. Bring that to the big screen with Ahsoka, maybe bring in Luke, like whatever. If it's a whole culmination with Thrawn, whatever it may be that they have working on, and they put it on the big screen, I feel like that'd be a massive win for everyone. For one, you get to see the Mandalorian on the big screen, maybe see Luke again, Ahsoka, all of that. And then, like, I don't see how that doesn't kill in the box office.
Yeah, that would be cool.
And it kind of brings some more faith to the movie space. Because, like, if you're like a super hardcore Star Wars fan, seeing all this stuff get announced and then, oh, it's not happening. Patty Jenkins movie, not happening. Damon Lindelof movie, not happening. The dudes from Game of Thrones trilogy, not happening. Rian Johnson trilogy, not happening. How many times can something get announced or at least be like, this person's working on this, and then it not happen? Something's got to happen eventually. And, you know, we haven't got a Star Wars movie in theaters in years at this point.
Got to wonder behind the scenes what's happening. But, I mean, obviously, you just have a lot of suits in higher up positions, and there's a lot of red tape and political things that happen in these processes. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously, they're very protective over their franchise, and they understand that the fans are fickle, and, you know, everyone's very picky. You know, the sequel trilogy wasn't, you know, or Solo as well, wasn't as the most well received. They're clearly trying to make sure that what they put out is going to hit.
Yeah, because I don't think they need to worry about money, obviously. Every movie in the sequel trilogy made $1 billion. Like, Force Awakens is the highest grossing domestic movie of all time.
Yeah. Is it?
Hard to argue with that, regardless of what you feel about it. Because I've heard so many people like, oh, they're going to wreck on them. I'm like, no. There's no way. They made so much money. And regardless of what people think, a lot of people love Rey. A lot of people love Kylo. They're still fan favorites with the wider general audience, for sure. There's no denying. Even if somehow they bring Rey back in something post-sequel trilogy or something, there is a way they can make it, like, especially if they have Filoni and Favreau involved, there is a way they can make it so people who didn't really care about her before care about her.
Yeah.
They've done it a million times before.
I mean, obviously, the Mythosar reveal was incredible. It was
surprising.
Yeah, I wasn't predicting that, but I feel like doing that, they have to be alluding to eventually seeing more of that.
Oh yeah.
I mean, like Boba, you know, and the Rancor. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I feel like they would have to do something similar, considering I've always heard stories of, you know, the Mandalorians and the Mythosaurs. So, like, but I mean, you know, it's just a classic. You know, it's like cowboys and their horses. You know, it's like,
they did tease it in season one with Creel saying, he's like, your people used to ride the ancient Mythosaur. It's like they teased it back in one of the first episodes, which is pretty cool.
It's a good way to circle. They do a good job at giving the fans what they want in a way that is like, it doesn't feel like it's pandering. I don't know why. No. They do a very good job at delivering what you're looking for. I do think sometimes in the sequel trilogy, there was a little bit of that, you know, because, like, obviously episode 8 was very divisive, and then on episode 9 they kind of had to retcon and be like, okay, we're gonna fix everything that you felt was broken. This show doesn't feel like it ever made mistakes, and it doesn't have anything to fix. They're putting it all out at everything that they, well, I mean, even with Book of Boba Fett, it was very similar.
Yeah, there's a big difference between fan service that's done well and like nostalgia baiting. You know what I mean? There, because nostalgia can be done very poorly and almost corny. They do it in a way where it like services the story, and that's what makes the big difference, is when you do fan service that also plays into the story. That's when it's good. I hate when I see like fan service used in a negative connotation, because it can be done very well. Marvel does it all the time with fan service, for the most part, being done very well, and something that adds to the story rather than just like, oh, we put this in here for a pop in the theaters, which they can be guilty of both sides, but for the most part, they do it on the positive side. Or you see in things like Cobra Kai or all of these like rebooted things like Top Gun Maverick and stuff. Like they do it in a way where it's like it cares about what came before it, but still paves the path forward at the same time.
Yeah.
And that's the big difference. And I think The Mandalorian does it perfectly, with moments like them revealing the Darksaber in season 1, or Luke in the end of season 2, or anything like that, or even like Ahsoka and Bo-Katan for anyone who is a fan of the animated shows. I think it's added more relevance to the animated shows as well, which of course Filoni worked on. But seeing the Darksaber at the end of season 1 is what made me go back and watch all the animated shows, because I was like, I need to find out what this thing is about, because I had no idea. I always recommend for people who haven't watched them, like, oh, dude, watch them. For one, they're great. for two, it'll add so much more context to some of these characters or moments within this stuff. Even seeing like breakdown videos and then being like, oh yeah, they brought this plant from this extended universe, you know, like book or this game or stuff like that. And I'm like,
they're always tying that stuff in.
Yeah. The amount of love and just like pure nerdiness they add into this show is absolutely insane.
Well, like, you know, Mando has a piece of Shore Trooper armor on his right leg. You know, yeah. It's just little things like that where it's just they try to make sure that everything always feels like it's in world. And, you know, there's more explanation needed. But like, you know, it's all connected.
Yeah, they truly make the galaxy feel massive in a good way, where it doesn't feel so contained to one thing. And obviously they go to a lot of places too, which also adds to that. But just like all of the lore and all of just the little nods to certain things, like for someone who loves Star Wars as much as I do, hearing stuff like that is always the coolest of stuff that, because I'm not familiar with like extended novels or a lot of the older games or anything. Like I just never got into them. But seeing like, oh yeah, that's from this and this. And I'm like, oh wow, that's really cool. And it just shows how much care is put into this property.
I am ready to get off Tatooine. I've done a lot of Tatooine.
We were only there for a brief moment.
No, that was good. They were just like, hey, just remember this is the galaxy we're in. But yeah, I feel like I'm glad to see them like using a lot of like new planets.
Yeah, I can fully understand. I get it, because there was a lot of stories in a row in different time periods all on Tatooine, so that's completely understandable. And I'm glad that it was a quick trip, quick in and out trip, maybe like 5 minutes. So you're like, oh man, we're in Tatooine again? Fuck. And then you're like, ah, oh, we're out of here. Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
It was nice to move on fast. But awesome, man. Thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
No problem. Before we get out of here, you want to let the people know what Galactic Empire has going on?
Our new album, Special Edition, drops May 3rd on digital, May 5th on physical. And we are going to be announcing some tour dates soon in support of that. We have a album release show here in Lititz, Pennsylvania on May 5th. And yeah, we're ramping up here for a new album cycle and, you know, going to be really pushing this. We've got couple new singles coming out, some more videos planned. So yeah, there's and no plans of stopping there. We're going to be continuing beyond Special Edition with some other ventures with Galactic Empire. So yeah, there'll be no one to stop us this time, I guess you could say.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to hearing the whole album, and looking forward to see what you guys do in the future. I will link all of your stuff down in the show notes below. If you want to support Metalcore Nerd, just go to metalcorenerds.com. We got merch there, all of our links there in one easy place. And if you want to follow me on my personal account, it's just at SeanXMon on Instagram and Twitter. Until next time, see you later, nerds.